now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side.
So this week, I'm happy to be hosting Ori and Nestor from D.Org on the Delphi podcast. Ori and Nestor are DAO pioneers, founding and building D.Org to become one of the most successful DAOs in the space, attracting top talent and working with projects like Compound, Balancer, Graph Protocol, and many others. Not only this, D.Org has recently begun acting as a launchpad for a bunch of autonomous projects such as Polyrap. At Delphi, we're massively bullish on DAOs. My goal with this interview is to go into the weeds with DAO power users and builders, getting a glimpse of what an organization of the future might look like. We'll cover everything from the high level on what DAOs are, what a taxonomy of types of DAOs might look like, to the low level on Ori and Nestor's experience with D.Org and its trade-offs versus a more traditional LLC type structure. Ori and Nestor, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, thanks.
No worries. So to start off with, could you give us a quick description of both of your backgrounds and how you got into crypto?
Sure, I can kick us off. I got introduced to Bitcoin in 2014 during my undergrad and quickly dove down the rabbit hole, changed my major to comp sci so I could understand it better. And the first project I did was trying to build basically a DAO protocol on Bitcoin using the UTXO model and the multi-sig script hash, which was really difficult. So once Ethereum came out, I was really excited about Turing complete scripting, where you can just write a small program that lets you do banking with a group of people. I also looked into incentives in the Tor network, like the proof of bandwidth protocols that were being discussed at the time. And since then, worked as a software engineer outside of crypto, in crypto, and moved to New York during the 2017 heat to be around more crypto people, and then kind of helped different projects at the time and got involved with D.Org like end of 2018 when we were getting started.
Yeah, and I was exposed to crypto, to particularly Ether, like back in 2017, because I started freelancing in Venezuela, where I'm originally from. And it became like sort of a common way of paying Venezuelan freelancers because of difficult access to foreign currency in the country. So I was exposed to that. And then through a friend recommendation, I got like more bullish on Ethereum until, you know, I knew more and more until I joined D.Org.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to hear a bit of the D.Org origin story as well.
Yeah, definitely. So it kind of started out of devs who had met each other online through virtual hackathons in 2018. And then a couple of us met in a DevCon, I think two or three, whichever one was in Prague. And people would kind of talk weekly about this idea of starting like a dev collective that was run as a DAO. And we were trying to figure out how that would work technically and also what the business model would be, before we finally realized we could basically consult for Web3 projects that needed dev assistance, and we could manage all our finances with the DAO. And so when it started looking like we could actually do this and have clients, we all quit our day jobs and formed the DAO in late 2018, early 2019, like depths of the last bear market. And yeah, the vision kind of came together as we think this is a better way to coordinate. Like, we all saw the future in front of us of DAOs and how that would help rectify a lot of the messed up things with how corporations and governments work and how people live and work together. And so we realized like the tools aren't there yet, but they're almost just good enough. They're good enough for some software engineers to start like hacking to this together. So we said, okay, we're going to run ourselves as a DAO and then and use the basic processes that we see around us, like voting. And as the processes get better and evolve, and as the tools evolve, we'll just adopt those new tools as we go. And the actual meat of what we do will be building the tools for projects in the space that already have like roadmaps and products that they want to, you know, grow and expand.
Yeah.
So that's an origin story. But Nestor came in like a couple months after that when things started getting interesting.
Back when I joined, we were just like a very small group of people. We were like, what, like 5-6 developers or something? And we all knew each other like very well. So everything felt like really smooth. And even though we are like many more now in numbers, things still feel pretty smooth. So that's cool.
That's really cool. So going back a bit and starting like at a really high level, how would you define a DAO? Like, what do you consider a DAO, and why should people care about what a DAO is? And obviously, you've been trying to build DAOs since with a Bitcoin scripting language. So I'm very curious to hear what you consider to be a DAO.
Yeah, I guess the reason I was even interested in the first place is I saw the way that like Israeli agricultural communes work, like the kibbutz movement, and how they kind of like share money and it's transparent and democratic, and how that worked for a period, but it kind of fell apart a lot. And a lot of the problems had to do with like trust issues around money management. And then also other kind of historical examples of people trying these kinds of experiments around the world often fell apart because of corrupt leadership and coordination failures with governance and money management. And so when I found about Bitcoin and how the core problem it was solving was like trust, you know, with double spending, I instantly saw like, okay, this could solve that same problem that like these different experiments around the world have had with governance. So yeah, the fundamental aspects of a DAO that attracted me that I think kind of define it is like transparent and participatory management of decisions, usually related to like financial assets, in a way where the rules are automatically enforced. So it's not just that we write the rules ahead of time and everyone sees the rules, it's also that the rules will continue to be enforced through software in this case. And so it's not a succinct definition, but essentially internet native, automatically enforced rules for a group of people to manage anything together.
Yeah, I think that's something that's worth highlighting is that DAOs, in the sense of hierarchy and power structures, they're pretty like horizontal or flat, you know. So I would define it as a sort of horizontal organization with rules that are enforced and in an automatic way. It's like having a collective with the right tooling, and that's how I would define it.
That's super interesting. Yeah, definitely agree with you. Like for us, crypto's killer use case is kind of solving coordination problems, with kind of money being one of them and contracts being another. And I think that we see DAOs as pretty much like the best exemplification of this, you know, where you started off with these contracts between humans and coordination being enforced mainly by like social customs and morality and religion, right? And then we ended up with legal contracts and LLCs. And I feel like now this is sort of like the next big platform for kind of innovation on coordination, is this smart contract, like enforceable. What people call like game theoretic guarantees for coordination, right? And I think it opens up a whole new spectrum, and I'm excited to dig into it today. You just a follow-up there. You mentioned like DAOs being horizontal. Definitely agree that all like current DAOs are like that. Do you think that's something that's like native to DAOs, or because DAOs can be programmed to be less horizontal, right? To have hierarchies and stuff. And is that something that you think might happen, or do you think DAOs are, there's something native about DAOs that makes them like horizontal or tend to be horizontal?
Right. I think, yeah, technically it's just code. So you could code in the bureaucratic hierarchy of a corporation into smart contracts and then, you know, simulate that on chain. But I think it's kind of a case of the orientation of it is going to be designed for the new medium that it's inside of. So, you know, in the early days of the internet, you had newspaper on the internet, you know, people just using it as a new medium to just do the same old thing, but on a new medium. But then you got like internet native media that looks a lot different from print media. And so I think the same thing with like digital organizations is that in the early days, like I feel like Aragon's first shot at a DAO framework early on was basically like a Delaware C Corp online or on blockchain. And but what happens when everything's transparent and based in rules that are like, you know, automatically enforced, the bureaucratic hierarchical system just starts to look less and less efficient because it's kind of a shortcut for decision making that the traditional world uses, where you can delegate authority to trusted administrators, right? And that's like the next best thing to having all of the people involved make every decision. So with DAOs, like obviously direct democracy is naive, just token holder voting that we see today, but it's the first step towards, you know, more sophisticated mechanisms that I think ultimately reflect the preferences and best interests of the stakeholders in the actions that the organization takes. And so instead of using like representative democracy or like shareholder capitalism, where the shareholders elect a board, which, you know, hires executives, which hire employees, that's just going to look slower and slower and more like have more information lapses than something that can directly tap into like the preferences of its stakeholders. Flat, I'm not sure. We'll see what it looks like. It will be more like variegated and sophisticated, but I don't think it'll necessarily revert to hierarchy.
Yeah, super interesting. I mean, I agree with you, but I also think there's some matters that it feels like you do need some like separation of authorities, right? Like one example for me is sort of in money market protocols, when you have like token holders voting on risk parameters and voting on asset listings, which are like very like technical sort of like risk decisions. It feels like there's people like better positioned to do that. And some sort of, I'm not sure if it's representative democracy or some combination of representative democracy with like skin in the game and stake would make sense. But yeah, how do you think about that? Like decisions that really do require sort of like specialist knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think it'll be more custom to the use case, like you're saying, like in a money markets protocol, it might look different than in a development collective. So I think the point is that it can be custom and we don't have to take like a set of templates and apply them to everything. Like today, organizations, you know, can fit into one of a couple dozen, if even more than a dozen templates, you know, C Corp, nonprofit, political party, et cetera. And there's some variations like within there. But yeah, I think it's about customizability and like designing something for the use case. And that could look like delegation. Yeah, I think delegation and separation is different from hierarchy, because saying, okay, this group of specialists is going to have like dominion over this area of decision making is different than saying this, like there's this chain of command and you need sign off from the authority higher up in the chain of command, which is, you know, how most of the economic activity and political decision making in our world happens today.
Yeah, that's very true. That's a good point. Delegation is different from sort of that chain. I think this brings us nicely to this next question about how do you classify the different kinds of DAOs that there are, right? Like we've tried to do this at Delphi. We came up with this sort of idea of splitting them into protocol DAOs, which are these DAOs that sort of manage a protocol directly, whether it's a money market or like Maker or something like that. And then you have like these collectives, of which I'd split them into kind of capital collectives, like the Lao and Moloch DAO, and then sort of worker collectives like yourselves and like Raid Guild, for instance. Obviously, like within, there's a lot of different distinctions, and within protocol DAOs, there's a bunch of different ones, but how do you think about it generally?
Yeah, I really agree with that taxonomy. And I guess one interesting differentiation on the protocol side is the progressive decentralization variety, where they started out as a traditional company and then progressively turned into a DAO, versus the ones that started DAO native. And maybe they started as small DAOs, but they were DAOs in their DNA, and then they became protocol governing DAOs. And so that's something that I guess there's a lot of room for discussion on, like which is a better approach and like for which kinds of topics. But the other category that hasn't emerged yet is product development and, you know, platform management DAOs that aren't, you know, doing something crypto native. So, you know, if you had a DAO that was governing Facebook or a DAO that was governing Uber, you know, I don't know where exactly in that taxonomy would fit, but it seems more like the protocol sector could expand to cover some of the things that we see in Web2.
Yeah, and you could also make a differentiation in between DAOs based on the governance mechanisms that they implement, because there are several like well proven up to the date governance mechanisms. So, for instance, there are DAOs that operate like with off-chain signaling, but on-chain execution under protocol DAOs. But then there are others like us, which do mostly everything on-chain with on-chain execution, like at least up until recently. So it'd be also interesting to analyze, like, how would you classify these organizations based on how do they handle their governance with well-proven processes?
Yeah, that's really, that's a good point. And in terms of worker collectives, like you guys, I think in Raid Guild and maybe LexDAO are the main examples that we've found, but there's not many. And so I'm curious, like, why and when did you decide to structure the org as a DAO? Like, when did, you know, did you consider other structures, or was it like kind of clear to you immediately that you wanted to do a DAO? And maybe, I know you mentioned you had your day jobs. I guess, like, are there any big pain points from your day jobs that you were like, the DAO kind of fixes this?
Yeah, I think most of us either come from the background of being employees at tech companies that, you know, we're under owners and managers and stuff like that, and or freelance backgrounds, right? So what we liked about being free, what those of us who were freelancers liked about being freelancers was the freedom, the flexibility, you know, take on these projects, don't take on those projects, change your rate depending on market conditions and what skill level you're at. But freelancing lacks support structures. So you don't have like a team that you can rely on. You can't take a break and still have like access to income and get help from people who are sort of like incentive aligned with you. And with employment, you have the reverse, right? You have a lot of support, you have a lot of benefits, but you don't have freedom and flexibility. And so for us, that was the reason that from the beginning, we want to be a DAO, because we didn't want to be someone like the people who had started it didn't want to like be the bosses of the new people who came in, because then we would just be kind of making the same mistakes in reverse that like we had experienced, and like the downfalls of like, you know, managers being out of touch with the work that employees are doing. And so for us, it makes sense from the perspective of, think of like a law firm where, you know, there's partners, you know, experienced lawyers come together and they're partners. And we wanted to kind of blast it open to a more generalized model where it's not just either you're a partner or you're working for the partners, but it's just partners of different levels in the partnership, right? So we have like a concept of reputation or tokens where maybe, you know, I've been in the collective for a year, so I've racked up like a lot of clout or reputation or tokens in it. And someone new who just joined, you know, barely has any because they just joined. And so for us, a really key part was not hard coding people's roles, but having just it be based on a simple algorithm. And so that even if someone was like a founder, they don't stay in some like special power position forever. Like, for example, if they step back or act badly or are not involved anymore, someone else could kind of like rise in the ranks and pass them in a fluid manner, not in like a, oh, we have to talk to the lawyers and change up the bylaws manner.
Yeah. And when you mention if DAOs took out some of the pain points from our day jobs, I think that that's actually one of the biggest points in favor of DAOs, like in regards to me, like as a day-to-day developer and freelancer. Because before being exposed to crypto and to DAOs in general, before I even knew that that was a thing, there were like lots of issues like in the daily work life that I had before in the corporate environment. And you often, like when you're not aware of these things and these kinds of structures, you always try to see these pain points like secret money management or secret salaries and not being able to do remote work, being in constant supervision, pressure, and things happen, and they happen because the people that execute these decisions have the named authority to do so. And that's it. And you see those like as quote unquote necessary evils of like the regular work life. But I think that at Dorg, at least in the way that we've been handling processes so far, it's like we don't need named authorities. We don't need moving or using influences like at a personal or from authority. We don't need secret salaries. We can have transparency. We can do remote work. We can work from all over the world. We can choose our own time. We can sometimes take a break. We can rely on other people. So it's like these evils, these quote unquote necessary evils are not really that necessary because you can take them out and things will still work if you have the appropriate processes and mechanisms.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, could you give us a brief intro to how DORG works? Like in terms of the revenue split to builders, sourcers, and the DAO. And also, like you mentioned, there's no managers. Like, does that ever cause problems in terms of, are they just not needed to sort of hit deadlines and stuff? Like, how does it all work internally? I'm super curious to find out. And also, I guess the full-time salary piece is interesting because you mentioned that trade-off, freelancer, less security, full-time employee, more security, but kind of, you know, some pretty big trade-offs there. So yeah, how do you manage all that at DORG?
Yeah, so the model is incredibly simple. Clients, customers come to the DAO and they want a project to be built, or someone's in contact with a client. And then basically we have an incentive in place for anybody to do the work necessary to get a project started, right? Like talk to the potential client, understand their requirements, get a team together, like of qualified builders, get like a scope of work and pricing figured out and, you know, contract signed, et cetera. And so what happens is we have it set up. So we have like 10% of revenue that comes in will go to the sourcing. 10% will be like retained by the DAO in the DAO treasury. And 80% of the revenue that comes in goes to the team executing on that project. And what happens for project management in the actual projects for clients is that we have to have like, we have a quality assurance standards in place. So there has to be at least one like tech lead, which is like a badge within our organization. And there has to be one project manager in that group. And the key difference here is that like if you have like a PM badge, you don't have managerial authority in the organization, but you're basically a facilitator to help a team, like a sub DAO, you could say, hit deadlines, you know, resolve confusion or communication problems. So it's not like the manager is above the engineers. They're actually like below them in a way. They're kind of serving the engineers to make their lives easier, help them with like achieving the deliverables that they're trying to hit. So we still have structure despite not having hierarchy. But if you can imagine, like money, you know, goes in, it gets split between these like three groups, the sourcers, the builders, and the DAO. And then the builders are over here autonomously managing those funds and satisfying that client, like hitting those deliverables. And then the DAO is collecting the margin off of all these projects. And then everyone working on all those projects is gaining reputation in the DAO and can have like shared power over how the funds get spent.
Yeah, that sounds like an awesome motto. So the reputation, is that the sort of DAO tokens? They entitle you to sort of voting on the treasury funds, and is it the same thing, or is reputation separate from the DAO tokens as well?
Yeah, it's the same thing. So it's like a simple one token model, and we're working on something new right now that like we haven't migrated to yet. But basically, up until now, the token has been non-transferable, and with every dollar that you earn one token. So we have an incredibly simple formula for deciding the distribution of power. So you earn 500 bucks this week, you also get 500 tokens in the DAO. And that way your voting power is proportional to your lifetime earnings, right? So if you're brand new, you don't really have any power, but if you're working full-time for months and months and months, you might actually pass someone who's been working half, like part-time for like way longer. So that way kind of power follows value added, quite literally.
How does that work with like the token portion, sort of the variable portion of your compensation, you know, when you're getting like paid tokens in these projects and stuff rather than just the stables?
Yeah, good point. So the stables are kind of the backbone, right? So it's like paying people's expenses and like the organization's expenses. And then the tokens are kind of like the exciting incentive layer and value aligner like on top. And so with the tokens, actually a similar thing happens, but instead of the like 80-10-10, but instead of 10% of those tokens being retained by the treasury, they actually just kind of get airdropped to all of the token holders in proportion to their token holdings. So that way, like working in DORG, you basically are getting like an index on all of the different projects that we're working in, like a smaller amount of, you know, potential like stake in all these different projects, rather than just getting the stake on the project that you happen to be working on.
That's very cool. Yeah, that's pretty much how we, it's interesting because that's how we structure things at Labs. Sort of, we want to make sure that people have upside in everything we do, but more upside in the things that they work on, because it also incentivizes them to pick the right projects to work on, right? And for us, the reason, because we've considered like a DAO model in the past, and kind of the thing that really was a sticking point for us was just the token portion, because with us, the majority of our upside comes from tokens, because we like to kind of run it pretty similarly to a venture fund, where we're looking to partner with projects like long term and really become like key stakeholders there. And so it's kind of like the token value is something that changes over time. And it also, like, if someone's doing a good job, it'll be worth more 4 years from now than it is now, right? So it's like, how do you give out the DAO voting power for a token that's being given now, but you want people to be incentivized to work on it for kind of the long term in like this venture builder style approach. And I guess that's something you're kind of dealing with, because recently you've started incubating projects, right? Like Polywrap. I don't know if incubation is the right word, but sort of like spinning off projects. So have you thought about that? Like a model for this longer term, like venture builder or incubator style thing?
Yeah. Right now for Polywrap, for example, it's very separate from the Dorg DAO. So it's just, if any of our members has an idea, a project that they want to work on, it's right now it's purely internal. Like we wouldn't fund an external project, but like if someone has a side project they've been working on and they think like a team of Dorg members should work on it and the Dorg DAO should incubate it, yeah, they can make a proposal to spend some of our treasury on that. And then it's theirs to kind of like, and the team that they put together to do what they want with, and then that can kind of in the future, or from that point on, have a longer term relationship with Dorg as basically a service provider that can provide development capacity for that new project. And so that's kind of how it worked with Polywrap, where Dorg gave essentially a grant for them to get started, and then they got started. They participated in hackathons, raised external money, and that's a completely external entity. But Dorg still has a team that is helping the Polywrap DAO build out its toolchain.
Yeah, I guess from our side, we're wondering what like a DAO sort of Y Combinator would look like, you know, where you're like actually incubating these projects. But I think, yeah, the incentives on that are really hard. This is super useful. Could you give us some idea of like the traction of the Dorg's achieved, like whether it's revenue or treasury or the projects you've worked on, like, yeah, whatever kind of stats you can share would be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. So we started, like I was saying, like end of 2018, officially like early 2019. So it's been about 2 years, and we figured out how to like incorporate our DAO in Vermont. And I think basically what we're the first, to my knowledge, DAO with like a working business model that was generating revenue at the time. Like there was like hobbyist DAOs like popping in and out, and they were mostly like just getting money from like the foundations that birthed them. So we actually found a business model to have a DAO that was generating revenue. And to date, it's been about 2.5 like million in revenue, almost all of which has already been like paid out to people working on projects. I think we've shipped over 50 projects for around the same number of clients. And today we have 60 active builders. And we like kind of define activity as, you participated and contributed to projects within the last like couple months. But I think we have way more rep holders, probably something like 80 plus. So out of those 60 active, I know like 15 have made more than 50K so far, and like maybe more than 40 have made more than 10K. So people are at different levels of like working part-time, full-time, and a couple people like Nestor, how many full-time would you say? I think right now we may have like 20 full-time.
Yeah, we have like 20 plus or something like that.
Full-time working for the DAO, but still as freelancers, right? So they're paid based on the jobs that they do, or do some people actually have like full-time salaries from the DAO?
Yeah, paid based on the jobs they do, but some jobs can include internal jobs, like, and we'll treat those similarly to client projects where there'll be a scope of work and there'll be a proposal, okay, fund this person to help us on this side of operations for 4 months, you know? And so everyone's a contractor. Everyone's a freelancer.
Yeah, but definitely the compensation is tied to the work done, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, Yeah, I was wondering, because you mentioned the security thing, like I wondered if there was any way for someone to, I guess, have that job security. Like, would you consider, right now obviously it's more like a work club, like you come together and do this awesome work together. Is there a plan for, like, eventually for you to have, like, sort of full-time employees that have, like, long-term contracts with a DAO or something?
Well, I can tell you from experience that when I quit my day job like 2 years ago, like, that was one of my biggest concerns. But there is, like, such an active project funnel, and we work for, like, big communities and big organizations that have, like, stable projects that we're building on, big and long roadmaps that we're contributing to. So we do have security in the sense of being able to be actively working for the DAO for a long time. So it's like I've been active for like 2 years ever since I quit my day job, and that's like the sense of security that we get.
Right, and anyone working in crypto, you know, having job security is all relative. But it's basically just watching it get better and better is our goal. So, like, now we see more and more people joining Dorg as, like, a nights and weekends kind of project on the side of their day job. And then after a couple of months, they quit their day job because they're like, okay, I see, like, all these long-term projects that we have that are kind of just, like, continuing and stable. And so, like, okay, yeah, I could work, like, half-time with this client, half-time with that client. And, you know, obviously, depending on if you're in Europe or the US, like, benefits are also a factor. So we're working with, like, Opolis, for example, on being in their, like, employment commons so that, like, US members could have the option of getting healthcare and things like that. So, like, we want to be working with the projects in the space that are coming up with better solutions for the work life kind of experience to, yeah, lean into, like, any tools coming out. For example, like, also Gitcoin, like, we work with them on getting members onboarded who have, like, graduated kernel, their, you know, their, like, training program, or who have, like, completed Gitcoin bounties.
This is so interesting. And could you give us some color on the type of projects that you've worked on? I know you've worked with some pretty big names, and I guess, what have you learned from building across all these different kinds of Web3 projects? Because you're probably one of the organizations with the highest concentration of just, like, Web3 developer talent in the world, I'd say, right now. So yeah, we'd be curious for any insights that you have there.
Yeah, so I think that the type of projects that we work on are usually, like, very bleeding edge. And when I say bleeding edge, I mean we take upon these issues or feature requests or use cases or roadmaps, which are not only really complex, but also they have probably not been done before. So we tend to use, like, unreleased or still experimental tooling or framework or libraries, just to try to achieve the use case that we want to satisfy. And in many cases, and it's something that we have learned, is that you should have, like, a different mentality from the classic Web2 development ecosystem, because from what I've learned, when I worked in the Web2 ecosystem, when we had, like, our Scrum meetings and we were planning, like, issues and features and whatnot, you would always say, okay, so how would implementation or the architecture go for this feature? And if the desired tool was not 100% complete or was not yet released, the feature will get postponed, and that's it. And you leave it at that. But since this ecosystem is, like, so fluid, there is, like, not only incentive but also intention to contribute to get these tools completed or released or debugged or whatnot, because contributing to the ecosystem is good for everybody, including yourself. So it has happened a couple of times where we've had, for a certain client, we've had to use, like, a certain tool which was still experimental or buggy. So we contributed to finishing that library or tool so that we ourselves could use it.
That's super cool.
And in terms of the type of projects, it's across the spectrum of, like, early stage kind of you know, have got received funding and have like a spec or like a roadmap and not a lot of no engineers hired, maybe just like a tech lead, to like teams that already have like products live, you know, lots of users and are trying to improve the developer experience or add a new product to their product suite, stuff like that. And yeah, I guess that spans like DeFi. It's been like Paraswap, like DEX aggregator, Balancer, did a project with Uniswap recently, Badger, and then DAO frameworks. So like DAOs are our bread and butter. So we've worked with like, I think almost every DAO tool out there. I mean, there's been a lot of new ones in the last like 2 months, so not everybody. But yeah, and then like social NFTs, done stuff there. And then worked with certain like L1s and with like L2s like Starkware and developer tools and infrastructure. So we kind of like see the space, see the projects out there we want to work with, and then want to have kind of these long-term like a dorg team out there for every project that we think is interesting and is like filling an important gap. So there's a lot of intention with the DAO with choosing who we work with. There's like deliberation and debate over, okay, what would this client like add to our portfolio, you know, to the kind of upskilling that like our builders could get, to like a piece of the ecosystem that's not yet built, and to a team that's like seems mature and like on the right path and like has a bright future ahead of it.
100%. Yeah, that's exactly how we kind of see it too at Labs, you know, thinking about who we want to work with for the long term, how much learning we're going to get out of this as well. There's so much exciting things happening in crypto that I think that just kind of makes sense. And are you taking, so like when you're doing this, the airdrop, like, is there a business model for you to be sort of like core team members as well for these DAOs, like sort of to be like engineer number 1, 2, 3, and 4, you know, you just take like that kind of token allocation and Dorg is effectively like the engineering team for this DAO, or is it more like project based? If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're asking. We've done both, and we lean towards being core team members or like an extension of the core team. So being treated like, you know, something on that list of like the early engineers. We've definitely done projects where, you know, they need something specific and we scope it out very tightly and it has a roadmap and a timeline. But I think we're better suited to be like embedded in the core team and just to swarm their like developer tools, their dev docs, their repos, and do whatever's needed, like as the priorities arise. Because things are so chaotic in Web3 that it's just silly a lot of times to plan too long into the future. You kind of just want to say, okay, these people are trustworthy. They have like a track record. Here's a good mix of skills. Just like get to work on like all the most important.
Yeah, that's how we like to work as well. I think it's the model that makes the most sense. And I think it's definitely like necessary in the space because there's such a kind of lack of talent in the space. And I think what you really want is people that are going to kind of share in the upside and have skin in the game, especially skilled people that can do that. I want to close the loop on sort of Dorg before moving on to more general DAO stuff. Cause as you said, you've not just like been one of the most successful DAOs. You've also built a lot of DAOs. You've worked on DAO tooling. So I don't think there's sort of anyone in the world that understands them better than you. But before that, like the last question on Dorg, what would you say has been the biggest advantage of structuring as a DAO, and then also like some of the biggest drawbacks of structuring Dorg as a DAO?
I'll start on advantages and maybe Nestor, you could take this.
Okay, cool.
So advantages, I think fluid onboarding and fluid kind of having people join our community is huge, because someone can come in as a tiny, tiny, tiny partner with very low overhead and then grow to be a larger and larger, larger partner, right, without like administrative overhead to that happening or managerial overhead. So it's really cool, like with the fluidity with which people can enter and also leave. You know, if someone comes in, they're not a good fit, you know, it's not like they have to get fired, you know, unless something dramatic happens and someone's like a bad actor and the DAO has to act to like remove them. You know, those edge cases are always going to be there. But for the lion's share of like humans that we're involved with, it's just super easy for them to like get involved, become, you know, closer to something like core contributor, you know, be doing it part-time. So that flexibility is what everybody loves the most about it, I think, compared to like past job experiences.
I'd say that in the terms of advantages for me, I'd say that the biggest advantage is probably transparency and the rewards or compensations based on merit and not on position or authority. And I think that that's one of the biggest benefits that we get from being a DAO and operating under this structure. When I worked back like in classic corporate work life, this was something that I saw demotivated, like lots of people, like lots of very talented people.
Politics, right?
Yes, exactly. Because politics like play a big role in our daily lives, like almost everywhere. So they do get into your workspace as well. So when you enter the DAO and everything is transparent, you can object what you don't think it's right, what you don't like, and you feel that everybody gets its fair share based on merit and based on the work done. You get, like your own builders, don't get demotivated because of unfairness, which is like the, I think one of the biggest unhappiness bringers in your life as a freelancer or employee. So I'd say that that's probably the biggest advantage, like feeling that you're being treated fairly.
Yeah, in terms of downsides, definitely there, it's just a thing that people aren't used to. So someone comes in and they just don't expect to have that level of control and transparency. And so they're kind of, there's a culture shock issue with, someone comes in and they're kind of waiting to be told what to do or how much they're going to get paid and stuff like that. And so we've had to come up with lots of like scaffolding around the experience of being in the DAO to facilitate that. And I also think that you have to be very on top of responding to situations because there's a diffusion of responsibility issue when someone doesn't have that formal role of being an authority, like the buck stops here, right? A problem can just fester for longer if there aren't really motivated people to step up and handle it. So I think diffusion of responsibility is a big problem. And so, we respond to that over time by like adding structure. I would like to think
like the badges.
Yeah, like the badges, exactly. So not, we're avoiding bureaucracy. We're always avoiding the tendency to bureaucracy, which I think we're all trained in, right? We all come from like bureaucratic worlds. So, someone new comes in, they're like, oh, I see this problem. I used to be at this company that solved it this way. And we're like, well, that actually kind of wouldn't work. It would kind of like really slow things down and make things confusing for people. So it's being creative with coming up with like incentive design and like scaffolding and bottom-up structures that achieve the same things that were formerly achieved, with hierarchy and bureaucracy.
Yeah, I agree with the division of responsibility being a good thing in some cases and a difficult thing in some other cases. Because sometimes when certain situations occur, we're like a bit slower to take action than normal because there are like no designated authorities that have like this specific like plenipotentiary powers to respond. But we have been solving that, just as already said, with structure, and also by writing down like explicit like good practices and what to probably do if a situation kind of like this happens, and a badge system with people that have like the capabilities and the trust to be able to solve these kinds of situations.
Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking through parallels from like my experience with Delphi Labs to this, and I guess one of the questions I would have is, what about, because it sounds awesome and like the fairness of people sort of knowing exactly how much they're going to earn and being rewarded for what they do. Are there situations where that sort of breaks down? Like for instance, if you have, let's say someone really talented that comes in, right? And sort of to retain them, you would have to, you would kind of have to speed them up, right? On the chain and that having to be a DAO decision, does it create more friction because suddenly someone's like, well, I think I'm really good, and I don't think this person deserves this. They haven't worked with them. Like, is there less sort of flexibility to do stuff like that? Have there been situations where you kind of lost talent because of that? I'm just trying to figure out like some edge cases of this.
Yeah. Like we were saying earlier, we kind of push compensation to the edges. We'll say, hey, this client is paying this much and this project has by that formula, this much funding. And then it's up to that team to decide how that gets decided, distributed. So there has been problems where there's an awkwardness when everything's transparent, you know, and if someone's like, hey, I have like 5 years experience on a really rare skill versus someone who has like 1 year experience on a really common skill, it makes sense to have like a price differentiation there. And so, yeah, it's not that there's DAO decision. I wouldn't say like the DAO decision making gets in the way of that. Like it has to be this big debate, but it's almost like a social barrier of being like, okay, you know, this has this market rate, that has that market rate. But yeah, we don't have like DAO governance issues because we try not to. We're like governance minimalists. We try to like push everything as much as possible, mm-hmm. like payroll and stuff like that to the edges.
I don't think that we've had like DAO level intervention in the rare cases where that happens. But actually, that was those situations like pretty much get solved ad hoc.
Okay.
Inside the team, you know.
That's cool.
When I say edges, I mean like this project is funded with this like 80% of the funds that came in from the client for that project, and so we had been doing that through. It would all be in a single treasury that was, you know, token holder controlled. And then people in that group would just make proposals for their payment. And then other people would just be looking to see if the math lines up so that they're spending within their means. And then that was it. And then now we're moving to like a federated multi-sig architecture where the money literally gets split, you know, upon being paid by the client. So it's like literally just going to a multi-sig where it's like, let's say it's a 6-person team. So we have like a 4 of 6 multi-sig with them. And the DAO like is not going to intervene and doesn't care like how you're dividing that up as long as you're doing a good job, client's happy, you know, the relationship continues.
All right, makes sense. I'm moving to sort of more general like DAO questions, just picking your brain a bit. You've worked on a lot of the top protocol DAOs and you've worked on most of the governance tooling stuff like Aragon and DAO Stack and all of those. So I'm curious, what are your general thoughts on the state of DAO governance and DAO tooling?
Yeah, I like that lately as people have become aware of the fact that there's billions of dollars of value in DAOs, treasury management has become a really big topic because that's always been our biggest conversation topic, you know, spreadsheets and multi-sigs and all this stuff to figure out how to divide up like money amongst a distributed group of people or to fund projects and stuff like that. And so I think that's one of the biggest missing pieces. And so it's been cool to see that that's become like a narrative again, or maybe for the first time. And that like now there's tools like Llama and Parcel that are starting to like figure out how to help people like visualize their finances and do like more sophisticated payments instead of like the model we've had so far, which is just these yes, no, you know, proposals, just these like binary proposals of should we do this one thing or should we do that one thing?
Makes sense. And like we think, and yeah, what do you think of Parcel and those types of tools and treasury management tools? Like, is that something you're using, and like, how does it compare with stuff that you've built before, I guess, to solve that same problem?
Yeah, I guess like the history of it is that there was the push for DAO frameworks earlier on with like Colony, DAO Stack, Aragon. And then now like the Gnosis Safe, the simple like multi-sig with a snapshot on top, like for signaling, has taken off, and now there's like a lot of tooling being built around that. And like the safe snap that like with Gnosis of connecting the off-chain signaling to the on-chain execution. So I think people have kind of said, okay, let's put like governance design on pause and more worry about like practical like business operations. So yeah, we've like used those tools, and we kind of had a similar shift where you know, governance used to be a big topic, but now we have like community run business to run, right? So we're thinking about like the practical stuff, like more efficient payroll and cleaner visualization of finances. So yeah, we've messed around with all the tools and like are adapting them as time goes on. And I think the deliberation side has gotten interesting, like how discourse has just become the de facto tool for governance deliberation, because that was something that used to get lost in the mix of, you know, really the real decision making is happening off chain in conversations, and then voting on chain to like move the funds or change the proxy address of the smart contract is just that final step of governance. And so yeah, seeing the space converge around discourse is promising. It's like deliberation, and then having that be in line with governance is kind of still missing. So the whole like governance experience of keeping the cognitive overhead low for anyone who wants to get involved with governance so that more people can get involved with it or like vet it or like whistleblow if something's not going right.
Yeah. Like on that topic, what are your thoughts on like voter apathy? That's something a lot of people bring up with DAOs and governance, like no one's participating in this, no one cares. Do you think that's a problem? And like, what do you see as the fixes, if so?
Yeah, I don't agree with the framing of it as like a problem, because I think that tries to tie it too much to the old world of like, you know, political, like governance, and then like corporate governance. Like it's a bad comparison, because these things like internet native, you know, you're in a bunch of like internet communities. You have a job, you have friends and family. Like we don't want to like force everyone to like care and always monitor all of the DAOs that they have like some sort of stakeholdership in. And so I think delegation is important. Like the way, you know, the other governance tool that's taken off is like the Compound, like governance alpha contracts that have been forked a lot. And like, you know, Tally has like the visualization for all of those. So yeah, I think delegation is a solution there. And then DAOstack earlier on had some more like sophisticated approach with holographic consensus, where there's like a prediction market. And that way, not a lot of people have to pay attention to governance, but there's an economic incentive to predict how things will turn out. And so that kind of like aligns incentives. So I think for now, it's not that big of an issue, but it's just going to be more of an issue over time. So we're going to need to get back into like innovating on the actual mechanisms for governance.
Yeah, I agree on it not being like an issue. And also like the current like implemented governance systems are like way more complex and mature than just like direct voting to achieve a relative majority and that's it. And you can evidence this in systems like what Compound uses, for example. And I would probably agree with the solution of delegation. Delegation is like a big thing and like really, really helpful for that. So if I'm a token holder or if I have like voting power in my DAO or in my protocol, but I don't want to be like worried too much about polls and voting, I can delegate my voting power to someone that I really trust and like may be able to choose him directly. And then you sort of mitigate that issue.
Yeah, and Gitcoin like had forced delegation when they launched, so that everybody to claim their tokens had to delegate to somebody, so that they kind of like guaranteed higher turnout. So we'll see how that turns out. I think that's a cool experiment. We'll see more things like that.
Yeah, and you can choose your delegate like directly. It's not like classic representative democracy, but everyone actually gets represented by the one person that they want to be represented by.
Yeah. No, I really like, I think delegation is the solution pretty much. And I think not just delegation in the ways they're implemented now, but also like potential sort of committee delegation, right? Where you're like voting in a committee that has sort of oversight over a particular set of issues. Like maybe it's like risk decisions or treasury decisions or something like that, I think makes sense to me. And on the DAO tooling side, it's for me, governance tooling, like especially participating in a lot of decentralized governance, it's like one of the most important verticals in the space and also one of the most underdeveloped. Like most of these conversations just happen on Discord or on Telegram, and there's like a lot of vote herding going on, right? Where people are like pinging big investors and stuff to vote for things, whether you know, or even selling votes in certain cases. But there also seems to be like a relatively low amount of people building governance tooling. I agree, it's gotten better recently, probably because there isn't a clear business model or path to 10-figure valuation in the same way as there is with DeFi. Do you think there's like a clear business model for governance tooling?
Yeah, I think it's a lot less straightforward because you can't, it's not like financial by nature, like DeFi. So, you know, you're not like helping people make money. So, you know, if you're helping people make money, you can take like a take rate on that. So helping people make decisions is more like qualitative. So I think, you know, what we've seen is grant funding a lot of times for these sort of things, which makes it move slower. Like now that a lot of DAOs have large treasuries, they're investing their treasuries into better governance tooling for themselves. And, you know, we could see alliances forming between DAOs to co-fund things that will help all of them. But of course, that has a tendency to move a lot slower than something with like their business model that can be venture backed. And so I think it's just harder, like, because it's harder to not be rent seeking, like to continually like add value, like you must with like a crypto product, so you don't like get your business model like forked away from you. And so yeah, there's questions about like governance effect, network effects that you can think through, like for example, in the DAO stack original idea, there was this idea of like a predictor network, where people would like specialize around helping different communities make decisions, and they would just like research and understand the best interests of those different groups and kind of make decisions for them or help them with decision making. And so now you've seen that evolve into the concept of meta governance, you know, where project can kind of get paid to like help projects make decisions, and they're, you know, have vested or locked up tokens so that they have like interests aligned. So I think it takes a lot more creativity, but yeah, there's business models that can be found there because there's just a problem that needs to be solved. So
yeah, it's tough. And it's also like really tough to figure out how to reward governance, right? Because doing simple stuff like just rewarding voting is just like obviously very easily exploitable. Whereas, you know, something like staking or like most of the services in DeFi providing liquidity, it's very easy to like verify the success condition. Whereas governance, you know, how do you verify that someone has like, you know, read the proposal, thought about it, and actually like voted, made a good vote, you know? Like even with something as specific as like listing an asset on a money market, the risk might only play out like 10 years from now, right? There might be stuff that has like really good short term, like the asset makes a lot of money short term, but it has like some critical bug, and 10 years from now, it leads to like protocol insolvency or something like that, you know? So it's like really tough problems to reward it, it feels like.
Yeah, it's like if you use the approach like Kleros or Aragon Court take with like you take a random sample of jurors, you have them each vote, and if they vote with the majority, they get the reward, and if not, they get slashed. So you could have like incentive games that have like a shelling point towards good governance, but it's a lot easier with objective decisions. Like, is this true or not true, like in an Oracle sense, rather than subjective, strategic, kind of long-term decisions. Where I think for now we're like seeing most teams revert to traditional, you know, delegate to this group and have, you know, long-term vesting for them so they can think strategically with like a longer time horizon. But it hasn't yet been like productized, and I think it could be.
Yeah, and that's what we've seen with a lot of DAO tooling, right? Like even Aragon, which is the clear leader, we realize like they're used a lot, but it's like very specific parts of the Aragon product, like mainly the multi-sig. And then most DAOs are actually just like building their own custom stuff. So you're seeing like even the DAO tooling that does exist, like most of the innovation seems to come from like actual DAOs, right? Like Compound contracts have been used by like a lot of different DAOs. Aave V2 governance is super interesting with splitting up the governance power.
Yeah.
I guess to what extent do you think at this stage it's possible to actually standardize and generalize DAO tooling versus it just having to be something where like the DAOs build for their own use case and then other DAOs pick that up, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a not so easy question to answer, because these processes, they have like matured enough to be used and trusted, but they are like always evolving, always changing. So organizations and protocols and groups of people like constantly adapt their processes. We do too. So it's difficult to like standardize in a single like norm or a fixed set of norms, like how should governance in an archetype way be. But what we've done for some organizations is instead of building like direct DAO tooling, we have actually built like more of a DAO tooling frameworks. So to provide the tools for other organizations to easily build their custom DAO tooling so that it gets easier for them. So instead of like giving you your specific use case, you provide the framework so that people can easily build their own tooling and reduce the work and overhead that it requires.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we're still at the point where improving developer experience so people can be faster in making custom DAOs seems to be like having more traction than making assumptions about how they'll be using their DAOs and then giving them like a template, like a factory for spinning them up on demand.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you look at the history of like web development, you know, you didn't have like WordPress and like big web development frameworks take off until there was a lot of proliferation of websites, right? So I think you're going to just see a lot of custom experiments and ones that work out like Moloch or like Compound just start to like proliferate naturally in like a forked manner, like copycat. And then from that, you can get patterns. Like today you see DAO House kind of factorizing, turning Moloch DAO into like a product with a factory contract, right? So I like that process of experimentation. So, you know, build DAOs specific to people's use case. And you can use frameworks for this. Like we've built custom Aragon DAOs for people that do very custom things. And then maybe have a custom UI or maybe use parts of the like Aragon UI, like something really popular that I think Curve started. And I think they were using Aragon for this is token staking for voting power. So your voting power is a function of how many tokens you stake and for how long. And this is like a novel thing that is impossible virtually in like the corporate traditional world. Like you can do it through legal agreements, but not in such a fluid manner where like thousands of people can independently choose the extent to which they're staked into the organization by how much they own and how long they're owning it for.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting and definitely agreed. Yeah, I mean, moving on to the last few questions. I'm curious, like, what do you consider the most successful DAO in the space and why? In terms of kind of a project that you believe you mentioned before, you know, something that's like truly DAO native, they're operating in a decentralized way and they're kind of pioneering like new ways of coordination and other than Dorg, I guess.
Yeah, hard question. I guess on the DeFi front, community wise, like Yearn, you know, starting as a DAO and then just now with like Yearn Governance V2, they're really thinking through everything we've been talking about here, like delegation, special committees and voting and powers and kind of having the ability to like retract powers if they're abused. But I know there's like a lot of shortcuts being taken there too, where, you know, it's not, you know, there's a lot of like admins involved, right? A lot of trust involved, but you do see a natural process where I wouldn't call it progressive decentralization. I feel like it started as a DAO in its DNA, but they took some shortcuts for operational reasons. And now they're gradually giving up those like shortcuts and they're very explicit about where they've taken shortcuts. So I like that because I think it's like a realist view on governance. Let's start community first, you know, and have token holders be the ultimate like rights holders. And then every couple months, update how we're doing things.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, yeah, I would agree with Yearn being probably, like at least on the DeFi front, the most successful one in terms of DAOs, in terms of intention, in terms of like road, you know?
Right, and then technically speaking, like we said, compound governance is pretty robust and has spread as a result. Community-wise, like I'm not so sure, right? Because it's been a small team for a long time and they have like a handful of like lead investors. And it's just hard, like going down the progressive decentralization route, we'll see how different teams do at it. But saying that, you know, this was built behind closed doors by a small team and like we're going to build a community around it and incentivize them to take on development and pass it off to them. Like we haven't really seen a success story yet of that working other than maybe Ethereum itself or like Bitcoin itself. So at the protocol layer, it would be really interesting to see the different tactics that are utilized, like Uniswap with their UniGrants program.
Yeah, no, definitely agree with Yearn. Really exciting some of the stuff they're doing. And I also a big fan of like Coordinate and the work they're doing with Yearn. I don't know if you've seen that sort of a payroll system that's pretty interesting.
I also give a shout out to DXDAO because they're way on the end of the spectrum of pure like decentralization purists and trying to do it all, you know, with no shortcuts in place. But you know, that also results in like moving like quite slowly. And I'm not like deep into that community, so I don't know like what they've been working on lately. But you know, on-chain voting, every vote costs gas, and like no delegation virtually of control, like. So it's interesting as a case study. I can speak on like the effectiveness, but it definitely like they're purists.
Very cool. And on the governance tooling or governance related projects, is there any one particular one that you're like super excited about that you think kind of has a good chance at happening first. Because I agree, DexDAO is super cool in terms of being decentralization purist and not taking shortcuts. But it also means that, yeah, in terms of it's way harder to like build products people want that way, right? And so I'm curious, like, yeah, what do you think in terms of DAO tooling that you think could happen like fairly soon?
I'm really excited about SafeSnap, if it's worth mentioning. I think that the tooling is mature. I think that the user experience that they are aiming for makes it very usable in the day-to-day, because there's not only like philosophy, but also like practicality and maturity of the toolings involved. So yeah, I'm pretty big on SafeSnap at the moment.
So Orca is interesting, taking a different approach with kind of tinderizing the governance experience, and then also like making the
tinderizing.
Yeah. So with their UI, I don't think it's released yet, but it's like kind of making it binary. Like, so you're just looking at one decision at a time and saying like hot or not. And
very cool.
Architecturally, you know, they're just assuming the composition of power that is in the space right now, which is, you know, different multi-sigs. So they kind of take that as a baseline assumption and are helping the experience around like being a multi-sig signer and then the permissioning of the multi-sigs also goes on chain. So like it's defined in an NFT. And I don't know how much of that is like released yet, but I know they're working with like a couple of big DAOs to
buy it. No, we really like the Orca team and the Orca product. I think it makes a lot of sense. Like, and for me, grants is one of like the very low hanging fruit, where I think there's like a big problem where there's kind of no business model for a skilled developer to build like a value added product on top of an existing DAO. And at the same time, these DAOs have sort of like billions of dollars in their treasuries that are just sitting there. And so I think you end up with this problem where we see a lot of projects kind of being spun up with their own tokens, where it doesn't quite make sense. It would make more sense for it to just be built on top of something that already exists, like Aave or whatever, but there's no real business model. Like the team can make so much more money by sort of launching their own token versus building on top. And so I think having a business, having like a scalable grants program where these teams can make sort of like eight figures by building really value add products on top of these DAOs. And there's like, they're released over time and vested, and there's milestone based releases and stuff, and all like kind of enforced by like a multi-sig or something. I think that's like super valuable. And I think Orca with the pods can kind of help do something like that. So last two questions. What do you see as like the future of governance and DAOs? Like, what are your kind of wildest predictions? Like, you know, whether it's how many people are going to be employed by DAOs, like, are states going to be DAOs? Like, yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, it depends on your time horizon, but I would say eventually everything, right? But I think the craziest stuff we'll see in the near term is memeified DAOs and like celebrity DAOs, kind of like we saw with the blow up of NFTs. You know, a celebrity announces like a DAO drop in the same way that we heard about like NFT drops, like, hey, my community, I'm launching like a DAO, you know, be online at this time to claim your DAO shares. And we're going to start like saving the whales, or we're going to start like building this school, you know, so kind of, letting people's imagination run wild with DAOs. Cause that's essentially what Dorg has been doing. Like we're software engineers, so we're excited about like coordinating through a DAO. And so unleashing that onto like more regular world sectors in like a playful way, I think is what we'll see.
Yeah, and I also think that yeah, probably like on a more serious tone, I can tell you, like, coming from a politically troubled country, I really predict the proliferation of DAO-like structures out of need of empowerment, out of need of disruption of the regular system, out of need for fairness and equality. So I really do think that countries like mine would probably start to see like a proliferation of DAO-like structures, especially for freelancers, because I think that need pushes innovation. And I think that from where I come from, like, there is a lot of need for it. And there's like a desperate need for empowerment and fairness also. So if DAO is something that can get you closer to that, like at least closer, then I think that it's very likely that in the near future, we're going to see lots of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are great. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's cool to see when DAOs started. It's very much like the internet thing you were mentioning of the newspapers, right? You were trying to put LLCs into a DAO or whatever, and it's just traditional companies coming into a DAO. Whereas I think what's going to be interesting is when people realize there are like these online communities and other kind of groups that so far, like they don't have an entity that suits them, right? Whether it's like Wall Street Bets, like there's no sort of way for Wall Street Bets to organize or even like a fan community, you know, there's no appropriate entity for them, where I think a DAO is going to, as they progress, is going to emerge as like a very ideal entity for a lot of like online communities and groups and even like non-online or like sort of online and offline groups. That didn't have one before. And I think we're just like kind of scratching the surface of that.
Totally. I think a great example of this is during the first wave of COVID, there was like all these mutual aid groups in different neighborhoods and cities that would get together, like collect money, help people, like pay people to go, like help at-risk people grocery shop, or, you know, people who lost their job, like support them. And, you know, they were using a combination of like Google Forms and GoFundMe and Kickstarter and PayPal and Venmo, this like hodgepodge and spreadsheets, this hodgepodge of like, you know, old school tooling to get this more like ad hoc community governance systems going. And I think there was a cool project. Someone in the DAO space quickly tried to spin up like a COVID help DAO, that like a system for people to spin them up in particular cities. Of course, like tooling wasn't as mature, so it was hard, but there's appetite, there's hunger for this in like the real world, you know, with like the unrest from like across the political spectrum, like people being upset with governments, big corporations, feeling powerless, you know, going into their like communities, like doing financial populism on Wall Street Bets, like there's hunger there. And so people that need to be in the crypto space need to be thinking about that, you know, in addition to helping crypto projects like organize and govern better. There's a massive world out there that's like hungry for this. So if we can get like the UX and the gas costs to be like, you know, manageable, then they're ready.
100%. Yeah. I think a big part of that as well is like DAOs are organized around kind of shared resources, right? And these resources have to be like ownable by a DAO, right? They have to be on chain. And so I think as stablecoins proliferate and start to be like usable as payments in more places and sort of more assets come on chain, it becomes way easier to kind of coordinate around these shared resources, you know, rather than having like only like sort of ETH and stuff be able to be kind of held in treasury and spent. But this was awesome, like a true kind of DAO masterclass. So yeah, really, really cool to hear about what you're doing at Dorg and hear your thoughts on DAOs. If people want to find out more about what you're doing or work with you, where should they head to?
Yeah, check out dorg.tech. That's our site, and then join our Discord from there. We're on Twitter. And then, yeah, but Discord is kind of where everything happens. So that's how you can like get involved and get activated or just be around and chat with people.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks very much for being here. And yeah, best of luck with everything.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.